Hello, and welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Incarnation, Chapter 3, The Birth of Veritage. Albany, 2001. After shooting the last four-minute segment in her week-long special report on the state of television, featuring Krishna Anand's commenting software, Ryoko Kimura reached out a hand to say goodbye before heading home to Joey. She was sorry to be ending the month of working on the story with Krishna. She was more accurately sorry that her time with Krishna would be ending. She felt like he was the connection to something she had been longing for. Plus, she had a crush on him, and unlike previous flirtations that had bubbled up over the 10 years she had been with Joey, this one was pulling her beyond musings and double entendre. She held his hand a bit long. Krishna was exhilarated from the interview they had just completed and held her hand tight. "Thank you so much, Ryoko. You're amazing," he exclaimed without letting go. Then he leaned forward and kissed her cheek in the French style. "Can you come get a drink with me? I'm so excited." "Call for Ryoko Kimura on line 2, rang out on the loudspeaker, and she walked away from Krishna to the phone hanging on the wall. "Hey, Joey. Yeah, the interview was great. You are? Sure, go with them. I'm going to get a drink with Krishna, the software engineer, to debrief." She glanced across the hall and smiled at Krishna, then looked down at the floor. Her hair fell over her face. "Sure, just stay up there. It's a long drive. I'll see you tomorrow, love." The next day, Ryoko arrived at work, wearing the same clothes she had on for the interview the night before. She found a message on her voicemail from Joey, left the night before, saying he had been trying to reach her at home for hours. Ryoko closed her eyes and had a visceral memory of Krishna's touch. She sighed, then called Joey's mobile, and when he didn't pick up, left a message that she had been out later than expected with Krishna and would talk to him after work. She skipped to the next voicemail. The director of the Association for Television Broadcasters in Washington, D.C. asked to speak to her. Ryoko called him back and listened to his reaction to her four-part series. She read between the lines of his overview to realize that network heads were terrified of what she had suggested could be a revolutionary development in broadcasting. The networks were always open to improvements from the status quo, he assured her. But they were hoping to smoothly incorporate this technology in a way that was mutually beneficial to all parties. They set up a meeting in D.C. for the following month. Six people were seated at the edge of their chairs around the opalescent lucite table in the meeting room of the Association of Television Broadcasters, a group barely known outside the industry. The tip of the Washington Monument pointed to the sky above the office buildings, visible out the long window on one side of the room. On the video screen filling the wall at one end of the room was the ATB logo, appearing repeatedly in a slideshow of stills from hundreds of TV shows, old and new. Lined up on one side of the oval table were ATB's Director of Public Relations, Director of Marketing, and two young people, Carlos, a designer, and Linda, a writer, the only people in the room not wearing business suits. On the other side were Krishna Anand, Ryoko Kimura, and Joey Koh. The ATB director who had first contacted Ryoko walked in last, walked past the chair at the head of the oval, and pulled a chair from the wall to slide in between Krishna and Ryoko. The moment he sat down, Director John Martin spoke in a smooth baritone that welcomed with its mix of brightness and warmth. "Let me start by saying how thrilled I am at having you here as a working group. I know you are all very busy, but I think that the way to put our best foot forward is to have you help craft this thing." "Well, thank you," Ryoko piped up. She naturally took the lead over Joey, who always worked through an agent, and Krishna, who was most at home speaking computer code. "We need to establish what we are doing, because, of course, we all have our various codes of ethics, loyalties, and agendas." of course," Martin said, then paused in case she had more to add. His pause put her at ease. This would not be a railroading, apparently. "Sorry to interrupt. Ryoko, this is a working group. There is no interrupting, just discussing. But if I may go on, Your story on the software Mr. Ananda's developed got us to thinking that TV can always use new ideas, and perhaps the best way to incorporate this one is to get on board and figure out how to make it great. Great meaning lucrative, Ryoko inserted. You're married to a good reporter, Joey. Ko smiled at the spousal compliment. Well, that is part of my agenda, but I said this is a group. Let's define great together. The writer broke in. Hi, I was doing some preliminary brainstorming and came up with the idea that it's like TV for a live audience, like the original theater, which is more dynamic, so we could play that up. Yeah, Joey responded. Working in theater is so satisfying. You feel the audience. If I could go back to the original thought, Krishna offered, the whole premise of controlling the way this plays out is counter to the interactive nature. People will shape their experience just as they organically did on the internet. Martin pushed the conversation like steering a canoe. So what I'm hearing is there's a benefit to feeling the audience interaction, and things should progress organically. Any thoughts, Ryoko? Or any more questions that could tease this out more? She felt Martin's sincerity. I hear what Joey's saying, and also in my tests with Krishna, I saw how exciting it was to be taking part in the commenting itself. It was like watching the shows with other people, even though they're somewhere else. Except you weren't somewhere else then, Joey added, and Ryoko froze for a moment. She thought he had bought her feeble excuses about that first night with Krishna. Perhaps she was being optimistic. Joey continued, but I imagine you would feel like that with strangers. Marion Fox, director of public relations, made her only comment of the meeting. You're going to have to balance the organic and uncontrolled nature of the commenting with the network spheres of controversy and liability. No one responded. The designer looked up from the doodle he had been drawing in his molluskine notebook. Do you want to see some logos? Talk about putting the cart before the ox, Krishna exclaimed. Is this already a product? Oh, no, man, sorry. I just thought it might help the conversation because this idea I had was like a combo of working together and justice. Any objections to just taking a look? Martin asked. It will give us a moment to let Marion's valid concern percolate. The sketches Carlos presented managed to give the idea an air of corporate respectability. Two logos were graphics only, but the third included a word. Veritage? Joey asked. Linda quickly turned to him and explained. Ryoko used the term in her report, and it struck me as a possible name for the whole concept, one that played up the whole truth-telling component. Get it? Truth in reportage. It would be helpful to have a catchy name that's more memorable than closed captioning was. Martin added, at the risk of putting the cart before the ox, as Krishna said, I think this potential name shows that we could define great as something having to do with integrity, which I hope would satisfy all of you, and also be something the networks could sell, since, to be transparent, selling broadcast content, is their business. So let's get the cart back where it belongs. Ryoko, can you define veritage as you use the term? Director John Martin demonstrated the skill that made him the behind-the-scenes voice for one of the largest industries in the world. At the end of the two-hour meeting, he had glided the group into congenially devising a special ATB committee administering the veritage program. It would create standards for implementing Krishna's system according to his specifications to maintain the organic neutrality he was after. He tapped Joey Ko to serve as spokesperson for the entire program, helping the public through the implementation using public service announcements, special appearances, and web videos. Martin sat back in his chair and took a breath. I hope this next item is the pièce de résistance, Ryoko. He smiled and leaned up to the table on his forearms. I'm thinking we need to create a new Veritage-based news network, funded by the majors. It would serve as a fact-checking home base for major network programs, a sort of Veritage home base here in D.C. Linda bolted upright and said, we could call it the Integrity Network. That's a fascinating idea, Ryoko cut in, but who would ensure... I didn't finish the idea yet, Martin politely interrupted and smiled. I'd like to see the editor-in-chief be Ryoko Kimura. Ryoko was hit by two waves of emotion when Martin made his offer. The first was the disbelief in events unfolding in a perfect way, that pinch me to make sure I'm awake feeling. The second was more complex. Martin wanted the new network studios in DC. That would give her an easy way to be with Krishna in Washington and have Joey in New York, which she knew he would never leave for DC. It was a way to have both her lovers. Krishna asked, "Is this something that will get tied up in negotiation with your members?" Martin replied, "I have the authority to do this unilaterally because it can be the association's network. I see how much oversight, or perhaps accountability is a better way to say it, means to you. And I think the other networks will see the new network as a standard among them all, so they're not going to get out on a limb in competitive circumstances." Ryoko sat for what felt like several minutes without responding, going over the scenarios, trying to imagine daily life without Joey, giving in completely to her passion for Krishna, saying no to the perfect job for Joey, possibly giving up Joey for the perfect job. It was an impossible conundrum. She just wanted it all. Joey wasn't sure what was holding Ryoko back. It was another instance of the odd emotional distance that had come between them since Krishna had been lurking in their relationship. He broke the silence by innocently asking Martin, "Have you always lived in D.C., John?" "I grew up in the Midwest, but I've been here since college. I went to George Washington University. D.C.'s a nice place to visit, but I don't think I could ever live around so much overt politics. In TV, it's all disguised as vanity, so it's easier to laugh at." Joey was just making conversation, but the director saw a possible reason for Ryoko's silence. Martin said, "Yeah, it's a political city, which is exciting from the news perspective. That's why I'd like the network here." He waited a beat. "But we could set up the Integrity Studios in Manhattan instead." Ryoko took the resolution to her impasse. "I think that would be better for us," she said, without being clear herself who "us" meant. Joey took it as favorable evidence in his ongoing wonder about his and Ryoko's relationship. With provisional agreement on all the major points, the meeting ended. Ryoko, Joey, and Krishna went to a bar around the corner on Pennsylvania Avenue. "What just happened?" Krishna began as the waitress swished off with their order. Joey slouched back into his chair and took a chance at getting some further evidence. "Do you two want to discuss this alone?" Krishna shifted in his chair and ran his hand over his hair. "No, Joey, this affects us all," Ryoko pleaded. "What do you think?" Joey smiled at her and then looked at Krishna and said, "We just got cast in a pilot, except it's real life." "I just can't believe that they're really being cooperative," Ryoko said, almost to herself. "It's like a dream come true, but it feels like a dream." Joey spoke to Krishna in a tone that came out like a jab. "Can you do all that stuff they were asking for?" Krishna heard the point on the question. "Absolutely. It's a piece of cake with the resources they're talking about making available to us." "What about you?" Joey said to Ryoko. "Can you see yourself in this role?" "Role? God, Joey, it's like my mentor Akiko's ultimate test. The job he just offered me is the overseer of truth. This is like fact-check heaven." "And nightmare," Krishna retorted. "I mean, everyone in America commenting on shows?" "Isn't that what you wanted, Krishna?" Joey exclaimed. "I mean, that's what your software's for, right?" "Yeah, I just didn't think about becoming the administrative person to take the idea into a national infrastructure." Joey saw his point and softened. "I can imagine that's a pretty big difference. But like you say, you can draw on other people, other resources." "You know, Joey," Krishna spoke unguardedly, "it's a piece of cake compared to getting people to do it without it being a joke. That's what you and Ryoko have to do." New York, 2002. The creation of Veritage involved a free-flowing exchange of ideas between the work group ATB had established and the staff Ryoko was in charge of at the Integrity Network. Ryoko drew on the training she had received from her mentor, Akiko Sato, and her husband, Thornbridge, to provide the mission. She drew on the knowledge of the ATB work group members to understand the motivations and concerns of TV producers and networks. She consulted with Krishna on technical issues and collaborated with him in exploring the possibilities of what this new technology could mean. Their passion for the project fueled their passion for each other. They became one and the same. Every moment they weren't defining Veritage, they were creating their own clandestine relationship. Dad, what did you do when Mom had her affair? Joey asked his father at the bar around the corner from Archie's apartment. I went through those stages of grief, anger, rage, repeat. But did you do something about it? You mean besides write some of my best poems? He laughed. I'm sorry, this is not an abstract question, right? What's going on? Joey told him about his suspicions regarding Ryoko and Krishna and about his reluctance to blow up the project they were working on because of jealousy. It's a classic kind of romance in the theater, right? Archie proposed. Star and director get excited about the work they're creating and it translates into a romance for the duration of the production. Then it ends. I guess. Ryoko has always been so passionate about work, but I don't think it's ever translated into a relationship before. This guy is pretty amazing, granted. So are you, son. Yeah, I'm not saying we're in a competition. I mean, I actually like the guy. I don't know if anything's even really happening. That's the problem. They might just be working closely on the project, and that's the end of it. I worry, though, because this production doesn't have an end date. Well, if you don't want to rock the boat on the project, I think the only thing to do is wait and see. Unless it's going to eat you up, in that case, confront them. I guess I'll just watch for more evidence. I mean, if I'm just misreading the situation, it would become an awkward mess. You sound like a saint. I was an angry bastard. I am upset, but I'm going on hunches and innuendo, not worth losing Veritage over. Archie raised his glass. To Ryoko and Saint Joey. They clinked glasses and drank, both hunched slightly over the polished oak bar. When Veritage launched with a handful of prospective scenarios, contingencies, and protocols, the Veritage work group was relieved to see the system worked well and easily, and that the public seamlessly transitioned from their web commenting experience to a parallel system on TV. It surprised everyone on the team that over the first year, things went without much challenge. No technological glitches, no friction with sponsors, not even much inappropriate banter among middle school students. The first hitch, surprisingly, was a demand from the President of the United States. President Juarez had ridden a wave of Latino pride into the White House, though he had about as much in common with his supporters as an 18th century nobleman had with his serfs. Juarez built a business as the son of fourth-generation Mexican-Americans. His father owned a large car repair business in Laguna Beach, a haven for high-income art lovers and luxury car commuters. The president was a Dean's List student at Stanford and was recruited into a corporate law firm that served the film industry. He rose to partner, then left the firm and became a very successful turnaround specialist, revamping the staffing, accounting, and production of a company to show return to health and profitability. His wealth helped fund his campaign for president. His film industry connections provided the skilled storytelling that made him look like a better choice than a white governor of Minnesota, who was more liberal in every policy area relevant to the working class. During her campaign news analysis, Ryoko had tried to warn that Juarez would likely operate like a cost-cutting CEO, and said in one segment, "It's unlikely that there will be any benefit from a Juarez administration to the hard-working, paycheck-earning, struggling to make rent, working two jobs, scaling back on college plans, skimping on housing, no insurance Latino demographic." Most Latinos ignored such analyses and similar Veritage comments. When the votes were counted and Juarez proclaimed the victor, they awaited the savior portrayed in Juarez's rags-to-riches fairy tale commercials. The day after he took office, Juarez announced preliminary details of how he would achieve the radical improvement of opportunities that he promised from the Capitol steps during his inaugural address. The show was broadcast from the Oval Office, the president looking straight into the camera, hands clasped with his faceted edges of the ruby stone in his gold Stanford ring catching the spotlights. He announced that he was declaring war on U.S. inefficiency. He chose the word war intentionally because over the past several terms, presidents had increased their unilateral powers in times of war, including the circumstances in which they could engage in war. Once moderated by the need to convince Congress to pass a declaration, the president could commence a war for reasons that were deemed unconventional, that is, not about tanks and planes, but wars involving terror cells, cyber viruses, and, most relevant in this instance, economic threat. A rumbling sound in Spanish began reverberating across the United States as President Juarez announced that his administration would attack inefficiency by immediately ending insupportable payments to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and food stamps. He announced a suspension of federal income and corporate taxes for 12 months to allow unfettered business expansion. The few government services he deemed necessary would be funded by a consumption tax that would increase the price of all goods by a flat percentage that Veritas comments noted would hit the poorest people the hardest. The Spanish rumble quickly made its way through the Veritas system, nearly crashing the state-of-the-art servers. Artificial intelligence editors digitally struggled to re-aggregate comments in ever more efficient segments to allow a meaningful on-screen display. A similar rumble in English and other languages was simultaneously growing into a visual roar, all scrolling over the president's speech. The White House press secretary was on the phone to Ryoko Kimura within seconds of the first comments. "You want me to do what, Mr. Secretary?" "Shut down the comment stream. This is cyber terrorism." Ryoko stalled him by saying she had to put him in touch with the legal department. She put him on hold, and the light on his line went out. A second call to her office had come in when she put the secretary on hold. It was an agent from the FBI who informed her that forces were converging on the Integrity Network for purposes of national security. Ryoko punched up a number on her cell phone and discreetly whispered, "Bob, get a camera crew downstairs, but stay on the line while you're doing it. Tell me when they're ready." She stalled the FBI caller until she got word that the camera crew was in the lobby. Ryoko tilted her laptop's camera toward her face and said to Bob, "My laptop feed is live in 3. The producer on the other end of the Ryoko's line put up a 2-second message announcing an interruption of programming, then inserted an inset image of Ryoko next to the president that she was feeding from her laptop's built-in camera. "This is Ryoko Kimura, live from Integrity Network headquarters in New York. I'm on the phone with the FBI, which is attempting to silence the Veritas stream currently playing comments on President Juarez's Oval Office address." She heard a growl in her phone, "You'll pay for this," followed by a click. The producer cut to images from the lobby where FBI plainclothes agents were speaking to the receptionist, and 20 combat-ready FBI agents were at the ready just outside the front door. The network won a First Amendment fight with the White House, and the Integrity Network's Nielsen ratings for viewership set new records over the following week. The activity on the network brought Veritas to a new level of public appreciation. The president's ongoing unilateral actions created enough of a reaction on television screens to become a topic of conversation throughout the off-screen world as well. The Integrity Network had become the go-to place for a neutral analysis of the policy options, and there were voluminous comments over shows or any political or news topic. At the height of a week of comment fever, Krishna burst into Ryoko's office. "Ryoko, we need a comment-only show," he announced. Ryoko was at the small round table at the window with 2 staff attorneys. "What do you mean, comment only?" she asked. "Every program is getting overrun with comments because everyone wants to talk about the war." "Right, of course, half are about whether we should be calling it a war, but go on." She raised a finger to Krishna. "Could we continue this later, gentlemen?" she asked the lawyers, and they left. Krishna continued, "Let's put you and 1 or 2 experts at a round table with a comment flow, and you can all engage the comment flow directly. It will be like breaking down the wall between the content and the comment." It took Ryoko 3 seconds to consider the idea. She picked up the phone and called her primetime producer. "Jane, can you get me a constitutional lawyer, an economist, and a sociologist for tonight's show?" There was a pause as she heard the moans, then agreement. "Krishna is going to come down and tell you how to hook up the feed to use directly on the show. Run it on the background with a copy on our desk monitors." Krishna ran his hand over his hair and said, "Are you sure you want to go this fast? I mean, I just thought of it." "This idea is bloody brilliant, and I don't want that light to fade by even 1 lumen before we shine it." "Go change the world, Kimura. Let's change the world together, Anand." He turned to go, and she reached out and grabbed his sleeve. She pulled him back and kissed him long and sensuously. "Somebody will see," he said, looking around. "Where's Joey?" "Joey's in L.A. and no one saw, my love," she insisted. He walked toward the door. His fears calmed and got cocky. "Anyway, save it. I need to concentrate." "You could work a miracle with one hand and make love to me with the other, you gorgeous genius. I'd have you do it too, but I need to help Jane find the sociologist. Krishna bobbled his head and walked toward the production studio.